God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in DC, let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. He didn't draw it on a whiteboard. He didn't conjure it from his hands. He spoke. The Lord said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in the world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. Welcome to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll talk a bit on this program from time to time about what I call the separate countries. And I would, I guess, be more correct if I were to refer to them as the pagan lands, because they're pagan lands. And I'm speaking about, in these cases, most often, the separate countries of California and Oregon and Seattle, Washington. Washington's kind of split in two. In fact, all those states are. The eastern part of those states and the northern parts of California, the far north, are far more conservative and far more churched than their counterparts south. The reason we do this is really to let the rest of the world know what's going on in these pagan lands. Why? Well, fundamentally, to inform has been our habit. The program, though, is called The Disciples' View. It's also so we can pray and pray properly for what's going on in these separate countries and separate cities. And in defense of that phrase, a separate country, I'm talking about lands that have set up the ability to kidnap your kids and to call it legal. I am talking about lands that's if a kid can get a $15 Greyhound bus ride and get to California or Washington, they can get sexually and chemically mutilated against the parental wishes. And cops in those states or those countries are impotent to help. It's expressly forbidden in Washington state for police officers to help you find your child if that child's in a Planned Parenthood-sponsored clinic getting injected or having an abortion. That's a separate country. These are places that have outlawed speech of doctors. In the separate country of Washington, they've attempted to take away the license of a doctor who practices out of Idaho, Dr. Ryan Cole, because he said things they don't like about some injections they want people to get, despite all the evidence that these injections don't work, which is the least of it. They're also very harmful and very deadly. In fact, just yesterday, the FDA approved more boosters, despite the fact that mathematically speaking, to perhaps, maybe, prevent one child from getting sick with COVID, one, you'll induce 100,000 bad reactions to the virus or to the injections. That's a separate country. But nowhere, in my judgment, is this more clear than it is in the treatment of police officers. I knew this was coming, and a friend of mine, former colleague Jason Rantz, knew it was coming. A police officer was asked to respond for a drug investigation. So a colleague, a fellow cop, unfortunately ran into a woman in an intersection, and that woman was killed. She was 26. It's an unbelievably tragic circumstance. And in the separate country of Seattle, it happens often. Not with cops. It happens often that people get hit in intersections. Why? That may not be the case with this young woman, but very, very often it's because people are stoned out of their minds. And they're allowed to stay on the streets stoned out of their minds. In fact, not just stoned out of their minds, but in situations where they've driven themselves into a drug-induced psychosis. So the officer was responded to do a drug test on the police officer who ran over the woman to see if he was impaired. There's no reason to believe he was impaired, but it's standard protocol. In his car after this investigation, he had a conversation with the head of the Seattle Police Union. And in that conversation, his body cam accidentally came on and the conversation was recorded from
him. Yep, totally. All right, brother. Well,
Yep. I'm sure TCIS is. And I... Oh, he's good. He says, well, normally we don't give voluntary statements. And I said, hey, you're going to have to decide if you wanted to give a statement or not. But it does not seem like there's a criminal investigation going on. Otherwise, there would be other... What's that? Yeah. Otherwise, there might be other people arriving, correct? Yeah, I mean, he's going 50. That's not out of control. That's not reckless for a train driver. Yeah, lights and sirens. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some... Initially, he said she was in a crosswalk. There's a witness that says, no, she wasn't. But that witness could be different because I don't think she was thrown 40 feet either. I think she went up on the hood, hit the windshield, then when he hit the brakes, flew off the car. But she is dead. No, it's a regular person. Yeah. Yeah, just write a check. Just... Yeah, what? $11,000. She was 26 anyway. She had limited value.
It's a callous statement. Sounds like a very callous statement that the officer makes. And his name, the officer's name, is Daniel Adurer. He is the vice president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He was talking to the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, Mike Soldan. He became aware that the body cam had captured the conversation and he self-reported. He went to the Police Accountability Bureau. He self-reported, this is what happened. And from the one side of the conversation and what he said was going on with Mike Soldan, what they were talking about was how lawyers in Seattle will simply write a check. And the worthlessness of young lives in Seattle is legendary. I give you downtown Seattle in all its former glory, where you can go find people that you think are in their 50s, but they're actually in their mid-20s, so ruined on drugs that they look zombie-like. And I'm talking about Walking Dead-style zombie-like. And if you think that's an exaggeration, go look in downtown Seattle, but don't go alone. Don't go without someone to protect you. Young black people, and in fact, their so-called allies in liberal land, have been taught to believe that it is a reality that everywhere, every single day, cops leave their houses with the intent to go murder young black people. You're familiar with this case of Takiyah Young. So Takiyah Young was shot by cops. There was body cam footage. It was reported, of course.
In Ohio, a community is looking for answers after police shot and killed a pregnant mom accused of shoplifting. The incident was caught on police body cam, and we do want to warn you, the video is tough to watch. Here's Scripps News correspondent Jamal Andrews.
A tragic police shooting caught on video. Takiyah Young, a 21-year-old pregnant woman, was accused of shoplifting and was shot and killed by a Blinden Township police officer. After community outrage and pressure.
Okay, so let's stop there. So what do people who hear that portion of the report and no else hear? They're witness to the fact that cops shot a pregnant woman who was accused of shoplifting. What do black kids hear? Another cop murdered a black sister. She was accused of shoplifting and she was pregnant. So he murdered her. There was a poll done about 3 years ago during the planned Black Lives Matter Incorporated riots in cities in America and their insistence that cops need to be killed. And they got that done. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now. What do we want? Murder. What did they get? Murder. What do we want? For people to hate their brothers. What did they get? People hated their brothers. What is Black Lives Matter Incorporated? Well, functionally, it's a terrorist group. Spiritually, it's a hatred group. According to closed camera television footage, Takiyah Young did, in fact, openly steal alcohol. It's a pregnant woman stealing alcohol. She did get into a car. Police did come and tell her to get out. She did refuse. They did try to open the door. An officer did stand in front of the car. She did take the car out of park and proceed to drive towards the officer. Is he at that point to voluntarily be killed? Or should he step aside and let her go so that she might run into another person? See, in the separate countries, there's never a reason for a police officer to detain a black person. Oh, now, white people, well, that's a different story. In the separate countries of Washington and California and Oregon, the mere mention or the mere happening of racial slurs are reasons for cops to roll immediately. That's a true fact. There are bias crews in Washington and Seattle that if you report a bias crime, cops will roll, but only if it's biased one way. There was a Seattle city employee. He was a tech guy, and he decided to get on to email in Seattle and call all cops, all of them, white supremacist Nazis, on email throughout the city. Nothing happened to him. Nothing at all. Nations can survive a lot of things. We will survive in eternity because we stand with the Lord Jesus. We've already won. But what nations cannot survive is no law. Without law, you do not have a nation, just as without a border, you do not have a nation. And when laws are selectively employed, specifically on a racial basis, you're building two countries, just like the NFL is built. The National Football League, I can't watch anymore. They've constructed two countries. There's not a black national anthem. There's a song that black people like that speaks of their struggle, speaks of their history. But there's no black national anthem. We're one nation. If you create a black national anthem, the next one has to be an Hispanic or an Asian national anthem. At that point, you don't have a nation. Some people know what they're doing. Others don't in terms of splitting this country up. But remember, who was the first politician? The first divider of people was Satan. Surely you won't die, he said to Eve. I mean, God just wants to, he just wants to keep you down. Nations can survive a lot of things, but not no law. There was another insurrection, as I'm sure you know. So this is the office of Kevin McCarthy, where he's trying to carry out government business. And his staff is being prevented from carrying out government business. That, according to the January 6th committee, is in fact an insurrection. But this was a good insurrection because they're fighting for a good cause. Nations can survive a lot of things. They cannot survive no law because nations cease to be laws. There was a incident where a mother and son have been sent, decided to plead guilty to walking through an open door at the U.S. Capitol. They've been sentenced to 5 years, but rather than try to fight this because they know that process is punishment, they've decided to take the 5 years in prison for walking through the Capitol. And I believe this is the case where the son picked up some zip ties. Did he zip tie somebody? No. In fact, I believe the zip ties came from the bags that officers left sitting around in the Capitol. So the police bias, the anti-police bias, I thought that was just in the separate countries of Seattle and in California and Oregon. It's not. It's been on one side of the political spectrum who now accuses the other side of the political spectrum of being anti-cop, because they're observing an FBI that will track down a mom and son like this, or an older man in his 90s, nearly, from Harlem, for walking on the lawn of the Capitol, but they still somehow cannot be bothered to find a way to charge Patrice Cullors and the other heads of Black Lives Matter Incorporated with RICO charges. They can't be bothered to do that. And they're easy to find. Patrice Cullors lives in a $6 million mansion in the Hollywood Hills. May God have mercy on the people who have torn down our laws. This is the Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll continue with Bill Gates' next move to get into your pockets by once again lying about God's creation. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. My name is Todd Herman. There is in Alaska something happening that can affect all of us, and it goes down to just a major, major pattern that exists within what I call the party. So when you hear me refer to the party, I'm referring to big tech, academia, big pharma, the Mockingbird media, and deep state organizations. And before people go running from the phrase deep state can mean many, many things. In my mind, it's an entrenched bureaucracy that feels it's a law unto itself. And they are. They're lawmakers. They're unelected lawmakers. They're more powerful than the Congress of the United States of America. Oh, boy, they can't coin money. Well, they took a run at that. Yeah, no, they've created ways to have their own budget. In fact, it's more than a run at that. The FDA doesn't rely on silly things like tax money. That's not as their only source of revenue. No, they get 40% of their money from Big Pharma. You know, the companies that they say they're investigating. That's deep state. Lizzie Warren set up the Consumer Fraud Protection Bureau. The most unconstitutional bureaucracy ever invented. The head of the Consumer Fraud Protection Bureau couldn't be replaced or taken down or removed even by a sitting president. No, they got to stay as long as they wanted to stay. And with their budget, it wasn't relying on taxpayers at all. They got to create their budget by suing and fining companies, and therefore grow independent of any congressional oversight. That's deep state. Deep state is also a collective mindset. And that mindset is, it can be very confusing unless one understands the consistency of it. So, for instance, I have a conversation, you'll hear part of this. I talked with my friend Zach Abraham. And Zach is on my podcast every Friday or so, usually every Friday, but 90% of the time. He's the chief investment officer of a company called Bulwark Capital Management. He's a dear friend, and I trust him with my retirement money, most of it. He won't let me invest all of it with him, and that's wise, you know, chickens and baskets, or eggs and baskets and all. And you can hear this entire conversation at thetoddhermanshow.com, which is where my podcast emanates, from which my podcast emanates, that page. And we were talking about Alaska and something that's gone on in Alaska. This is reported by a woman named Wendy Patterson and then reprinted at revolver.news. She writes about Alaska. I want to make sure that you understand what is about to happen so you can prepare. Biden canceled all of the Alaska drilling on federal land. At the same time, he stopped allowing liquid natural gas from being transported by train. That leaves only one mode of transportation, trucking. About 2 months ago, the largest trucking company went out of business. Yellow, one of the nation's largest freight and trucking companies, announced it is shutting down, leading to one of the largest mass layoffs in the recent history and potential shipping cost increases. The company is in bankruptcy just 3 years after getting a $700 million loan from taxpayers. So that's going to create a massive supply chain issue of liquid natural gas, which means your utility bills as well as the price of gas is going to skyrocket. Biden used 300 billion gallons of gas from our reserves to keep the gas price artificially low, and they can't do that anymore. They have set us up in every way purposely to make gas prices and utility prices skyrocket. So fill your gas cans, buy propane, etc. now while you can still afford it. So you can look at this. And my friend Zach looked at this and said, hey, it's foolishness. These people are not smart people. They don't understand physics. They don't understand money. They don't understand markets. And I push back on that. Yeah, there are people who work in the Biden administration who are not visibly smart or really about anything. There's got to be some ways in which God has gifted them. There's got to be. He's a giving and loving God. There's got to be some gifts, but it's not this. There are people as well who are actively engaged in attempting to turn over our economy. And here's what I mean. Force everybody to buy new things. What if you can't afford to take the house you've had powered on natural gas and suddenly convert it back to electricity? Well, you might have to sell your house. And BlackRock and Vanguard, two very mobbed up companies, mobbed up meaning they're basically governments, they stand ready to buy your house and to buy entire neighborhoods. After all, they've said you will own nothing and you will be happy. See, if you find the through line in this, you're going to notice some commonalities. The problem is always our freedom. The solution is always their control. That is a consistent through line through any of this. There's another through line. Their ideas are so good and so compelling and so important that they must be forced upon people because they're that great. You also find this commonality that no means of logic matters. No means of observational, testable, observable, testable, falsifiable data. None of that matters. Our own eyes don't matter. None of it matters when something is at risk, as such as the kids. God's design doesn't matter. And some of the groups behind this, for instance, there's a green energy group. It's called the Rocky Mountain Institute. They partnered with a country to implement an economy-wide transformation away from oil and gas and onto solar and wind power. Oh, the country? Yeah, it's China. Chinese Communist Party. They're the organization that put out the study that claims to show that your natural gas stove in your home in North Carolina is giving kids in New York City asthma, but only black kids. You'll notice these commonalities. Always the victims are the same. It's always black people, or it's always people who are confused about their gender. The natural gas, sure, yeah, because it attacks black kids. It's very selective. It's like the virus. You know, the virus doesn't hurt you if you're sitting at a table without a mask and eating food, but it will kill you dead if you take your mask off when you're walking into the restaurant. These are very selective elements. Yes, it's another example of God using the simple to shame the wise. I think it's another example of God showing us just how utterly corrupt human systems have become and are likely to become. So I talked to my friend Zach Abraham about these dynamics, and I asked him about wind power. He and I had a funny conversation about wind power. If you are in anywhere where wind power exists, you know this. Those things break down all the time. They're massive. If you've not seen these windmills, people have no idea how massive they are. They're like a 3 or 4 story building. Each of the spokes of the windmill is like a 2-story building. They're so massive. And here's a fun fact for you. If the winds are going particularly quickly, in other words, providing a lot of opportunity for power, like 30-mile-per-hour winds, you know what happens often? They'll turn off 75% of the windmills. They'll shut them down. Why? Well, because the existing power grid suppliers won't let them produce that much power. No, because it would put them out of business. So hydropower say you got to turn the windmills down. None of it makes any sense until you go back to the through lines, the commonalities. The problem is our freedom. The solution is their control. So Zach Abraham, Bulwark Capital Management CIO, reminded me of some history, some Maoist history, when Chairman Mao decided to be the great controller of the weather.
When they started rolling this stuff out, and it wasn't certainly just me, you were like this too. So many people were kind of the annoying kid in the back of the class raising his hand going, hey guys, have you thought about this? Right? What does it take to replace these things? What about migratory bird patterns? What's it going to do to the underlying vegetation? Here's what's funny to me. We see ourselves now, it's not a perfect comp, but do you remember the story from Maoist China when Mao was in charge and he was trying to show the robust nature of the Chinese economic system and how he rejected the idea that they couldn't feed their own. And so he said, we're going to specialize, we're going to grow wheat, and we're going to be the number one wheat grower in the world, right? And we're going to show everybody the might of the Chinese system. So they got record amounts of wheat seed, spread it all over the place, and then lobbied all the people to run around banging pots so birds wouldn't come down and eat the seed, right? Well, it works. Seed pops up. They've got a bumper crop, but guess what? All the birds are dead. They died of starvation because they had nowhere to land. So the insects took over and wiped out the wheat crop.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, this happened. Okay, so you now look at them and they're doing the exact same thing here, right? They're going, "Oh, we're going to get all the wind and then we're going to reject the idea of that's going to alter migratory bird patterns and then therefore birds aren't landing and spreading things where they used to. That disrupts, you know, the local ecology. Then these things are breaking all the time. Did you see the video footage, the other one? You've got this beautiful wind farm out there and you've got this propeller just blowing black smoke everywhere.
Yes.
Right? Just a plume.
Yes.
And then they break all the time. So what they're finding is what they've decided to do, because somehow this is good and natural, I suppose, they just bury them.
They just bury these parts. And these things are, if you've never been next to one of these things, yeah, they're so much bigger. And if you've, we're just talking about the size of these things, and you'll see them consistently break. And then to bury them, the half-life of these things, from what they're made of, they're never going to decompose. So again, it's based upon a lie and an observable, easy, falsifiable lie. Are they better for our environment? Not if you don't like buried metal and steel and fiberglass for time immemorial. Now, I mentioned Bill Gates before this segment began. Bill Gates is part of a cabal of billionaires who is betting hundreds of millions and billions of dollars on stealing farmland. And thank the Lord Almighty, this has been stalled in South Dakota. And I'm honored that God let me play a very, very small part in getting that stalled. The heroes are the farmers in South Dakota who got no help from the government there, Christy Noem. They're trying to steal farmland to build a carbon dioxide sequestration system. So take carbon dioxide out of the air, store it in tanks for their own use. So what Bill Gates has done, and Reid Hoffman from LinkedIn and the investment group in which, you know, Bono is the founder, what they've done is they've convinced the world that carbon dioxide is a great poison. It's going to kill everybody. But right now, they're getting into the business of taking that carbon and turning it into products. But they wouldn't want to do that without getting access to your tax money.
Let's figure out where we want to go and where we think the technological advances are. And then let's figure out a way to make our investments tax write-offs, right? Like,
oh,
I mean,
yes. Oh, talk about this.
The one thing that we've got to sit back and acknowledge is you look at guys like Gates, you look at guys like Peter Thiel, look at guys like Musk to some degree. Obviously, these guys are very, very good at looking out in the history and seeing the arc of technology, right? And all of them are smart individuals, meaning they're trying to skate where the puck is going, right? Not where it is. And if you're sitting out there going, okay, you know, and I do think Gates has I think he's right economically that as you pursue this fiat currency investment model, if we live in a world where there is infinite capital, I don't think it takes a reasonable human being much time to sit back and think, okay, well, if we live in a world with infinite capital, then we live in a world of finite resources. Therefore, resources will most likely be far more valuable than capital. Right. So how do we make these massive investments? Because coming up with new technology is really expensive. Right. You got to break a lot of eggs to make an omelet, meaning this is why startup VC guys in tech are looking for a 5% hit ratio. Right. We'll invest in 100 companies. If 95 of them fail, we're good. Right.
Yeah.
So How do we make that investment? How do we make that messy process tax deductible? Well, we construct a big story about saving the planet around it, right? And now we'll get the government to quote unquote partner with us. Now we'll get the government, because if we start this company, we can do it under the guise of a 501c3 because we're trying to save the world, man, right? But, you know, who owns the patents? And I know for Gates in particular, and I'm sure, I know he owns the patents, you know, for all the stuff that he does. He's after ownership. He's not after, you know, being a stakeholder. He's after owning the whole thing, right? So anyway, it's just, that's been going on for years. I mean, but yeah, no, this is just a beautiful way to get all the investment, essentially letting government take the first step, right? Using their capital and their tax loopholes and all that kind of stuff to break the eggs and then prove the technology. And then, you know, then you're off and running.
Yeah. The eggs are broken in our heads. In other words, the level of, gosh, what would I call it? It seems to me to be the activities of a psychopath. And I don't mean that to be cruel. I owe the paying off of my first house to my job at Microsoft. I owe so much to the opportunity to work there. It was perhaps in terms of a J-O-B job, it was one of the best I've ever had. Given great creative freedom, one of the most creative times in my life, in fact. But megalomania. Oh, by the way, you can get Zach's radio show at knowyourriskradio.com. I should say that because he's kind enough to let me use these clips for the program. The megalomania of looking at God's design and what Gates has done recently, in addition to trying to sequester carbon dioxide, to take it from us and own it, to own what plants inhale, is to take 7 million acres of trees and to destroy them. Not to build houses, but to put the wood in the ground. Because it's Gates' contention that that will fight off global warming, climate change, acid rain, or the next climate catastrophe. Oh, it's, of course, incidental that this is happening at the same time that Dutch farmers are being told they have to destroy 40% of their herds. Not to sell, but to destroy. Well, because of nitrogen. See, if you look at the through lines in all this, it's always the same. The problem is our freedom. The solution is their control. And their ideas are so good, they must be forced upon us. That's weird. Even the Lord Jesus doesn't force his ideas upon us. This is The Disciples' View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back with the Tower of Babbling. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman, and I'm speaking to you from what I call the high mountains of free America. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek statement. There's lots of places in America that are relatively free. That happens to be, in this case, North Idaho. And there's a good portion of you who live in free states. And there really are. There's states that are free states and states that are not. And I got a couple of emails I wanted to get to before we get to our feature called Tower of Babbling, which is just our way of honoring how God continues to allow people to stand on great pedestals of sand, fascinated by their own wisdom and their own foresight and greatness. Well, that is, they've abused themselves mentally into believing all those things about themselves. I've fallen victim to that back in the Master of the Universe days, back in the dot-com era. Back when I was at Microsoft, they just mentioned that last segment. So I can relate to that. I can even empathize. However, I can't empathize with using positions like that to force people to do your bidding. Oh, and in the Tower of Babel, I'm late on one thing. I should have pulled this audio a lot longer because COVID and the modified RNA injections, that has been my beat for the past 3 or 4 years. But I do want to get to a couple of emails. Cindy from Houston, Texas. Dear Todd, I found you on AFR. Praise God. You were one of my favorite fill-in hosts for Rush Limbaugh. In fact, probably my favorite next to Mark Stein. I put you side by side, very different men, very different approaches, but both of you, my favorites for Rush. I do miss him dearly. What a joy to hear you on AFR. You mentioned the other day that you choose to attend a big church. I'm in the process of seeking a church home, but am really turned off by big mega churches. Could you share with me why you decided upon a big church, which I would take to be a mega church? I didn't get the name of it. If you're willing to share, I'd listen to that. Cindy from Houston, Texas. Cindy, and she sent me a really nice picture of her in a Rush Limbaugh t-shirt. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate that. I just answered the question. I attend Real Life Ministries in Post Falls, Idaho, and I hated it. The first time I went there, I hated it. It was like a mall. How would I describe it? Impersonal. The second time I went there, I told myself I'd give myself three times. The second time I went, I hated it slightly less in that I found the music good, which is the least important thing to me, really. I mean, it's worship. And there's many worship directors who work long hours. I've learned later in life that music is still the most divisive thing in churches. Did you know that? One of the top reasons people leave churches is the music. But I liked the music. I admit that. And it was good. And I felt like at that second occasion, the teaching was solid. All right, this is a biblical church. The third time is when it happened for me. A pastor stood on stage and spoke of his former problem with pornography. And I was stunned at that level of transparency. And he mentioned his problem with alcoholism. Less stunned by that. But then he mentioned the fact that the church has a group of people who are working on getting off of alcohol, Christian 12-step, and a room filled with men, he said, and some women who have been addicted to pornography. I found it brave. And then I realized, why would I find it brave? We're in a group of Christians in the body of Christ, and we're to hold each other to account. Afterwards, I introduced myself to the senior pastor, Jim Putman, who's become a friend of mine, I'm honored to say. And I said one thing to him. I said, it's an awfully big church. I've never thought of attending a big church before, being a member at a big church. And Jim smiled and put his hand on my shoulder and he said, does Jesus think it's too big? I'm not to say that big churches are the answer. Cindy, I would just say that for me, it happened that this church also focused on something I'd never been taught. I'd never been taught what it is to make a disciple. I had pastors at Lutheran churches say, now go and make disciples. I didn't know what that meant. So it's a very real teaching church. So in that way, it worked for me. And I would pray that you'll find a biblical church that is absolutely tight to the Bible, specifically on the redemption issues. A church that's built on small groups, even if it's a smaller church. A church that recognizes Sunday as important, but not the most important. That every day living in Christ and walking in Christ is important. And that it's a community. So I appreciate that. Thank you for your kind words about Rush. I miss him every day too. And God rest Rush Limbaugh. Oh, by the way, if you're wondering about that, I filled in for Rush for a long time. And this is from Nathan. Nathan writes from, why did I not write the city down? I did not write the, oh, hold on. Tallahassee, Florida. Sorry about that, Nathan. Appreciate that. Nathan writes, how did you get into talk radio? I want to do the same thing. Well, that's a very, very long story, Nathan. The way I originally got into talk radio was I found a very, very small station, 1,000 watts. I went to that owner who I met through a friend, and I walked in and said, I have never done talk radio. I have created some audition tapes of myself pretending to do talk radio. Here's what I sound like. And in those cases, by the way, I had music. I played my own callers. I was a caller arguing with myself. And I did my own commercials. I did sounders that sounded like it was radio. I mean, it was fake radio. And I used a multi-track recorder because at the time I was a songwriter. So I had this gear. And I gave that to Tom, and he gave me a shot. He let me do a one-hour show the night of Halloween late at night and the night after Halloween late at night. Both times were very, very few people were listening. My mom, who's a liberal, and and was almost embarrassed by this. She was my first caller, my mom, and my friend Dave produced the show, took calls. So that's how I got in. And then the deal I cut with Tom was, I will take, I'll give you 35% of any revenue I sell on my show. And you give me 35% of any revenue you sell on my show. We did that. We shook hands. In fact, we wrote a little contract. You still have the contract. And that's how it happened. So it's a much longer story than that, but I'll not make the show about me. In this current iteration, I will tell you, you hear my voice on AFR because of God Almighty. Period. Period. I didn't do anything to pursue this. This all happened in the background, and it is clear as day to me that it was the hand of God and nothing else in that. We honor the Lord. And the way I contend, he is still using things like the Tower of Babel to disabuse people of the notion that they have their own wisdom.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Who doesn't love a yellow school bus?
Trans women are women, trans men are men, and non-binary people are non-binary.
If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
The Tower of Babbling.
This is the vitally impeachable Secretary Mayorkas of what we used to call the Department of Homeland Security, but it doesn't have much in common with security anymore. And is responding to pleas from the mayor of New York for assistance, since now all of a sudden there's illegal immigrants there.
Mr. Secretary, the mayor has somewhat clarified his comments, but not walked them back by any means. What's your response to those comments?
I would say the following. First and foremost, we're dealing with a broken immigration system, a fact about which everyone agrees. It is one of the rare things about which there's unanimity of views. And we need Congress to act, number one. Number two, within that broken immigration system, we are challenged by an unprecedented level of displacement in the Western Hemisphere of historic proportions. We have responded with a model approach that has proven to work, which is to build lawful pathways for individuals to arrive in a safe and orderly way.
We've built something that's proven to work. Is he referring to the app they built that legitimately the cartels are using to set up appointments so that people they're trafficking don't have to wait in line and they don't have to show ID? Is that what he's talking about? That's really happened. And it's been described that they are hacking this app. They're not. It's nothing so sophisticated. All they're doing is masking the IP addresses or the MAC addresses from their phones so they can come from wherever they're at. They can be doing this from Africa. They can be doing it from Italy. They can be doing it from China. And being allowed to traffic people into the country. That's what he's describing as working. You see why we call this the Tower of Babbling? Because you do three stories. That's the first. I'm late on this one, but I have to play it because my beat has been COVID. My beat has been the modified RNA. How beautiful is it that Novak Djokovic, who refused to get injected, won the U.S. Open? Incidentally, did you know that they refused to play the national anthem at the U.S. Open? He won the event sponsored by...
I'll take you to the Moderna shot of the day, and it was...
Saving the match point.
Oh, the match point to get to number 24. There were a lot of shots that were highly impactful. But here's the final one.
The man who refused to get injected wins the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open called that despite the fact that they refuse to play the national anthem there. Beautiful.
instructive. And none of the announcers mentioned that. Everybody watching knew. None of the announcers could mention it. Because Moderna owns this tennis match. Can we still call it the U.S. Open if it will not play? They will not allow the playing of our national anthem? Good question. I don't think I'm going to call it that anymore. You know what I'm going to call it? The Injection Open. Somehow that has a better sound to it. We talked yesterday in a show that was, for me, beautifully. I was so glad God took the show over. I went completely off script. We talked about my need, my empathy for the figurehead Biden. Not the corrupt skin he's in, but the soul inside Joe Biden. The soul called Joe Biden, how I just feel like that his soul knows it's in danger of eternal harm. Well, today it's someone who is supposedly covering for the figurehead Biden. This is spokesperson, spokeslier John Kirby responding to a very clear question. Washington Times' Jeff Murdoch asks a question about Joe Biden's state of mind.
John, in the past couple of weeks, the president has lied about being at Ground Zero the day after the September 11th attacks, falsely claimed he saw the Pittsburgh Bridge collapse, claimed his grandfather died in the hospital days before his birth. What is going on with the president? Is he just believing things that didn't happen did happen, or is he just randomly making stuff up?
The president was deeply touched and honored to be able to spend 9/11 with military members there in Alaska and some families.
This man has turned away from the reporter. He is reading from a notebook.
Was honored by their presence and the chance to make an important set of remarks about why we need to continue to remember that day. And he did that. And he spoke about a visit to Ground Zero, which he did participate in about a week or so after the event, and what that looked and what that smelled and what like that felt like. And it had a visceral impact on him, as it did so many other Americans on that terrible day. And he's focused on making sure that an attack like that never happens again, which is why we've improved our over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability.
He's so focused on making sure an attack like that doesn't happen again that on this day, he was so focused on that, that he also focused on giving one of the actors in that attack, Iran, $6 billion. So utterly focused on making sure that this nation is never again attacked, that he has made it impossible for us to know who's coming across our borders or under them or over them. He is so very focused on preventing such an attack like that that he's allowed the Chinese Communist Party to float spy balloons over our countries and right over the top of important military bases. That is an impressive level of focus, I must say. To John Kirby, sir, I pray that you're not lying for a living. I pray that you are not trading your relationship or possible relationship with God to cover for a man like that. I pray that you actually think it's truthful what you're saying. But I warn you that God knows your motives, all of them, and he knows mine. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And because we speak, we believe. He first loved us, so we speak his word, and we extend love to our brothers and sisters. This is The Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman, and God be with you.